Finding opportunities to save on operating costs is just one of the benefits you'll see with energy efficiency. To learn all the ways National Grid's team of experts can help you find ways to save, visit ngrid.com/business. Finding opportunities to save on operating costs is just one of the benefits you'll see with energy efficiency. At National Grid, our team of experts is ready to help. Our experts have strategies for increasing production and profits with energy efficiency and creating overachievers with safer, healthier learning environments. Opportunities to save money are everywhere, and we can help you find them at ngrid.com/business.
I used to think time was my enemy. My future wasn't looking good. So worried about the things I couldn't see. I couldn't see the things I could. I was aging fearfully, worrying my life away, when all along I should have been thankful for every day. Finally made a friend of time. Now you could say that I'm aging gratefully. Aging gratefully.
Broadcasting across this amazing nation and spanning the universe, you're listening to Aging Gratefully. I'm your host, gerontologist Holly Kelly, bringing you exceptional guests and novel information to ensure you age great, live full, and embrace each extraordinary day for the incredible gift it is. Welcome to Aging Gratefully, most amazing listeners. I hope you're doing awesome out there. You so deserve to be living fully and experiencing all that life has to offer. So let's smile to that and get our grin fest activated Aging Gratefully style. I love starting the show with our signature smiles across the miles, our smiling spandemic, the only demic we like around here. Because, you know, life can get serious and we can start thinking about all the things we have on our plate and it can kind of turn our smile upside down. But maybe we're already happy. And if you smile bigger, well, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're stressed, that smile can also kind of break up those worry vibes, and it's like hitting the reset switch for us. So today, I do want to talk about something really important. This is an episode I'm so excited to bring to you out there because it's a topic that isn't kind of like, oh, well, maybe I'll cherry pick this and I'll pull some things out of that and I'll be open-minded. No, not today. Today is a topic that is important for every single listener because we never know when we're going to need it. Well, sometimes we know. Sometimes we have advance notice, but that doesn't mean we're actually as prepared as we could be or should be. I know you're like, what is she talking about? So let's see, more hints. Sometimes we know what's around the bend. Other times we are ambushed at what is seemingly the most inconvenient time because things that happen out of the blue that are surprising never happened when it's convenient. And these kinds of things always seem to be at the worst of times to experience today's topic. Think something that's not on purpose, because they do call them accidents because they're not on purposes. So if you had an accident, where do you go? Yes, the hospital or an urgent care provider, but we are also patrons of these places outside of accidents, as in when we have tests or procedures done. With accidents, we often don't have a lot of time or energy devoted to the anxiety of such a setting because we've kind of got our plate full, so to speak, with the whole, you know, accident thing we're amidst. However, when we do know ahead of time that we'll be a patient for a hospital stay, we do have some time to get anxious and experience worry. But I like to always say, and you've heard me say many times, being prepared for something is a great way to alleviate unnecessary worry. From getting sick to a variety of surgeries or procedures we schedule ahead of time, we so appreciate having people and places to help us heal and become healthier. With accidents we never saw coming, the same applies. Life was going along fine, and then out of nowhere, we could have a serious health event or even be involved in something that needs immediate medical attention. In these instances, it doesn't matter what you had planned prior. All that matters is seeking qualified medical attention. That takes the precedent. And that is, of course, that you getting the best treatment possible matters. But if we don't know in advance, how could we be prepared for this something that may never happen and hopefully doesn't happen? You'd be surprised at all the various ways we can ensure both planned and unplanned admissions go as flawlessly as possible to put us in the driver's seat of our healthcare journey outcomes, as well as arm the medical providers treating us with real-time information so they can do their job to the best ability possible. I talk about being prepared a lot in my book, Sunrises and Sunsets, because in life, we prepare for all kinds of things, but admittedly, we seem to be more motivated to prepare for the fun stuff, right? Like preparing for a party or preparing for a vacation and planning the details of that. There's so much preparedness that goes along with much of what we do in life to make sure it goes perfect. But preparing for the not so fun stuff doesn't seem to enthuse us as much. I love the quote by Spencer W. Kimball that will make this week's Aging Gratefully alphabet soup for the psyche. Preparedness, when properly pursued, is a way of life, not a sudden spectacular program. Well, that's fitting. Preparedness as a way of life can make things go smoothly, all things, not just the fun stuff. It probably won't surprise you that this week's Aging Gratefully show dedication is to the adjective prepared, and it simply means ready to do or deal with something. But we don't always feel like it's simple to do all this preparing, but trust me, if you added these few things to your list, you would find they are fairly simple to implement. Preparing to me equals peace of mind for the foreseeable and the unforeseeable. And I want every aging rebel to be prepared for as many as life's what ifs as possible. So today we're going to have this conversation of being prepared for care, which in doing so is actually a form of caring for yourself. I'm so excited to jump into this conversation and welcome today's guest. Monique Nugent, MD, MPH, is a practicing hospitalist and physician leader. She completed her medical school and residency training at Loma Linda School of Medicine and her MPH from Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Dr. Nugent has built her medical career around hospital-based care to include leadership and advocacy work, advocating for every patient by working to make healthcare equitable, safe, and high quality. She's written an incredible book, an important new book, Prescription for Admission, released earlier this year, that can shepherd all of us towards ensuring we are not only prepared, but receive the most positive outcomes and experiences regarding hospital stays. It is with great pleasure, so excited to welcome you, Dr. Monique, to the show. Welcome to Aging Gratefully.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Oh, just when I saw your work, I've not ever done a show specifically just that speaks to this topic. And so many people feel a lot of anxiety. They feel unprepared. And many people are, of course, at the hospital because of an ambush situation, a health crisis that they never saw coming. And so in Prescription for Admission, this incredible book that you've written, you cover the gamut on all the different types of hospital stays.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was my goal. I started writing it during the first wave of COVID, originally thinking I was going to be writing a book about how to get through COVID. But as I wrote the book, COVID kind of was just showing the same exact problems I was seeing over and over and over again in all my years of being in the hospital. So in this book, you won't find the word COVID, because this is a book about hospital safe, and is applicable to anything that you have, any reason you would be brought into the hospital to stay for a few days.
I really love that you've created this work, and you actually make a distinction between people who may have frequent flyers of hospitalizations and people who come to the hospital out of the blue, never saw it coming, and were not in the least bit prepared.
Yeah. So the reason why I distinguish between those is, one, any of us could find ourselves in the hospital at any point in time, right? A bad car accident, something like COVID, right? An unexpected illness. And that's a very different type of experience. That's a much more get up and go type of experience versus people who have like a progressive or a chronic disease process that may have required a few times in the hospital. There is an infrastructure around those people, right? There's a way that they're being cared for, people who know them well, institutions who know them well, who have the things that they need. And so there is a difference between the two. Doesn't mean that one can't be prepared, right? You're never prepared for a car accident, but if you know certain things about yourself, you're not starting from scratch, right? But if you're somebody who makes a few trips to the hospital every year, then you come with a little bit more infrastructure, a little bit more baggage, a little bit more things to expect. And so there may be a few more steps you need to take and be prepared for.
Yes. And you put an emphasis on trying to get to the hospital that you are most aligned with, one that maybe perhaps you've received care from before. Mm-hmm. Why is it that you really want people to connect with that particular hospital versus, you know, maybe being, you know, driven 40 minutes away to a hospital, maybe that they heard great things about or it's new?
So that's where that care infrastructure comes into place, right? So like I said, if you're someone who has a chronic or progressive disease process, you're likely to see specialists. You're likely to need some kind of specialized care. And if you've been to the same hospital a few times, you've built your story in that medical record. You've built your infrastructure with the institution, right? If they have your specialist, if they have the surgeon, if they have your oncologist. So going to a place that has the information and has the structure to care for you is really important. That's not to say that if you're not in an emergency, right, you're on vacation, you're somewhere, you have to go to get care. Oh, of course. What I'm talking about is in your area, if you're able to get back to your hospital where you have your specialists, you have, you know, they have a lot of your information, they may even have some of the specialized cares that you need. That's really going to make a difference in the safety, right? Because the hospitalization above all is about safety. Yes, it's about getting better, but you're not getting better if you're not safe. And safety comes with information. It comes with support. And if you're in a place that has information about you and that can support you, then you're likely starting off on a stronger foot there.
Yes. And I literally read that in your bio. You really emphasize the safety aspect of it. And as a patient, we want to be safe in the hospital. And safe can mean lots of things, but we certainly also, we worry. We worry about a test or procedure. We worry about the competency of the person giving that test. There's so much anxiety surrounded by going to the hospital and not knowing what to expect, being concerned about, of course, our own life and well-being and recovery journey. So you say be the driver of your car. Of your care, be the driver of your care, tools to arm you in case of a hospital stay. But you say after 50, so we might need to be thinking a different approach post 50 care.
Well, I think after 50 is when people, unfortunately, start coming to the hospital a little bit more. This is where we start seeing some of the disease processes that you may have had when you were younger become a little bit more chronic, or even people develop things over time. And so, yeah, after 50 is when you start seeing people into the hospital. And this is when I want you to really start being prepared to be the driver of your care. And for me, driver of your care means a source of complete and consistent information so that people are able to make safe decisions about your care. And then you are actively participating in it. If, you know, I've met a lot of patients who say, like, you're the doc, you do whatever. If you want to be dragged through hospitalization, you can be. That's not fun, right? What you want is to know what's happening. And hospitals are busy places. And there's so many things going on. So if you're able to be someone who can give good information about yourself, right? You know your medical history, you know your medications, and you're participating, you're saying, like, oh, this medication is working for me, this one isn't. I would like to get up out of the bed. You know, I participated with physical therapy. Then you won't have that feeling of being dragged along through a hospitalization because trust me, it's very easy to get overwhelmed.
Communication is key. And you do recommend that people have their medications written down or bring your medications so that the staff is enlightened as to what you're taking. And I'm certain that that's for also drug interactions as well as to, you know, keep the therapy going as your body's used to it, correct?
Right. So, so I'm an internist, you know, and what I do is prescribe medicines. And when you come into the hospital, there's going to be something called a medication reconciliation, which is the process of us getting a list of all the medicines that you're taking. And then we'll look at them and say, for this person's illness right now, these are the ones they should be taking. And these are the ones we're going to put on hold. And these are new medicines I'm going to give them in the hospitalization. And then that process is going to be repeated every time there's like a movement of your care. If you go in and out of like the intensive care unit, back to the floor. And again, when it's time for you to be sent home, we're going to say, okay, what were you taking in the hospital? What do we want you to take at home? And so having that information about what medications you're taking is really key, because there's what's prescribed. I always say to patients, there's what's prescribed and there's what you're taking, right? And so we can tell by electronically, there's a lot of connections to pharmacies. So we can tell what you've been prescribed, but that may not be what you're taking. And there could be lots of reasons why, right? You may have doubled the dose per your physician's directions, but it didn't require you to get a new prescription because you had an extra set, right? Or maybe you cut down on something because you felt like there was a side effect that was going on and you hadn't had time to catch up with your primary care doctor. So what you're actually taking is really important for us to know, because like you said, we want to make sure you're safe and we want to make sure you're not getting any interactions with the new medications that we're going to be giving you that you need while you're hospitalized.
Yeah, so I've picked up a prescription before that was a new one, and then I have, you know, the prescription, and then I read the side effects and I'm like, I'm not taking this. So, you know, I would be falling into that category where it, you know, it's prescribed. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's your regimen.
Right. And I see it over and over again. I always joke that patients' daughters know the truth. Right. Because the patient will say, oh, ask my daughter, or this is what I'm taking. And they'll say, actually, Dad, you stopped taking that lisinopril 2 weeks ago. Oh, really? So, yes. You know, this is information to age, right? And so the hospital can get a lot of information from your primary care doctor, from your retail pharmacy, but you are the truth. You know what you do at home and you know why you're doing these things at home. And so own that information, be empowered by it, and let us know.
I think it's so important that we realize our stakeholdership as a patient, and that we realize that we're probably the most informational source aspect of that journey. We are relying on experts in their field that know things that we don't know anything about. But if we're not conveying how we feel or whatever needs to be conveyed about whatever processes are going on, then the people providing the care are only as good as the information received beyond practicing, you know, medicine.
That's exactly it. It is all about information, you know, and what you're taking and why you're taking it or why you're not taking it is just as important to us as the list of the medication, right? So you can say, I stopped taking this medicine because it was giving me this bad side effect. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and so this is information that we need to know. And this is really what I want people to be empowered to do, is to own that information and realize that by owning it, they're adding to their safety and they're adding to their quality of care.
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of people end up in the hospital because of an unexpected health event that, you know, came out of nowhere. How important is it for all of us listening to know CPR, know first aid practices? Is this something that we should take more seriously?
So, you know, out in the general public, there's been, I think, a really good push generally for people to learn these skills. And I'm very happy when I like go to the movies and I see that they do have defibrillators out on the sides of the walls. And I think that just shows that as a society, we've come to understand that if we intervene quickly, right, as there was a football player, and I'm going to apologize to any guests you have who knows football, because I don't, but I do know there was a football player who had a cardiac arrest on the field. And because they were able to intervene very timely, his outcomes were great, right? He had a bunch of other things on his side, right? He had peak physical form. But it's that early intervention that I think we have really come to understand that we can care for each other. We can intervene. And so I think CPR courses are a lot more abundant now. Even my neighbor across the street, she's a teenager, she gets her babysitting certificate. And part of that is to learn, you know, CPR. And so it's a great skill to have. And I would encourage anyone who feels empowered to do so to definitely go out and learn it.
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, it's an easy enough thing to have in our arsenal, hoping that we'll never need to use it, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's that timely intervention that you can be a part of.
Yes. That was just so scary when that happened to him on the field. I'm like you, I don't know football, but I love people. And I just, my heart was just in agony for what he was going through. And I even sent a tweet out, you know, prayers up. So I was so excited when, you know, he came through that. And definitely that is our medical wonder world working its magic for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. On the other side of break, I was hoping that we could talk about some different documents that are important for us to be aware of, and physician meetings and things like that, family meetings, how important and the role of these various things, if you're willing.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Don't go anywhere because this fantastic conversation will continue. Today, we're grateful to be with Dr. Monique Nugent talking all things preparing and or finessing a hospital stay for the most optimal outcome and experience. And we're also talking about her great new book, Prescription for Admission. You can learn more about her by visiting her at www.drmoniquenugent.com, MoniqueNugent.com. DrMoniqueNugent.com. By the way, I know you out there love our show's theme song. And for new listeners joining us, I want you to know that that is one of my favorite songs. It's called Aging Gratefully by the world-renowned, incredibly talented singer, songwriter, musician, and just all around fantastic guy doing all kinds of things, never quits, Aging Gratefully style, Jim Beloff. And he's been on the show a couple of times. You can find his music on iTunes or Amazon Music. And that particular song is in his album, Dreams I Left in Pockets. You'll love the entire album, but Aging Gratefully will be one that I know our listeners truly embrace. So check that out, as well as him at fleamarketmusic.com. Special thanks to you out there, awesome aging rebels tuning in all over the world. My goodness, thank you, thank you. I see our international audience, and I just want you to know how much I appreciate you taking in our messages from just completely circling the globe. So many different countries tuning in, because I know that you enjoy Aging Gratefully, Aging Rebels, and embracing new practices and all these amazing guests that we bring you in every episode. But thank you, FeedSpot, for recognizing us as a top three show. I noticed that they're doing 100 shows on aging, and we've continued to be either in slot two or three for several years now. And we really appreciate that. And it's because of you out there listening and embracing the messages that we share with our amazing guests. So I have to tell you my truth, and that is that you rock and you role model, and I'm grateful for each of you. I'm your host, gerontologist Holly Kelly, and we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Doug Vermeer, and I'm the producer and director of films like The Opus, The Gratitude Experiment, The Treasure Map, and the new movie, How Thoughts Become Things. I've just been a guest on the Aging Gracefully show, and what a powerful and pleasant experience. I'm going to encourage all of you guys to tune into this amazing show with such powerful insights. I can promise you that if you do, it will help you and will even change your life. So get on it right now. Be sure to tune in. And my website, www.douglasvermeeren.com.
Finding opportunities to save on operating costs is just one of the benefits you'll see with energy efficiency. At National Grid, our team of experts is ready to help. Our experts have strategies for increasing production and profits with energy efficiency. and creating overachievers with safer, healthier learning environments. Opportunities to save money are everywhere, and we can help you find them at ingrid.com/business.
Sunrises and sunsets. Final Affairs, forged with flair, finesse, and functionality, is a delightful book for every adult of any age and any stage. This multi-award-winning book, written by gerontologist Holly Kelly, is a soul-soothing journey and novel approach to completing your personal affairs and advanced care planning. Readers are calling it transformative, life-changing, and fun. Prepare lovingly, plan thoughtfully, live dynamically. Available on Amazon and most bookstores. Author autographed copies are available at sunrisesandsunsetsbook.com, where you can subscribe, register for a workshop, and more.
We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Joanne at JoJo Diamonds from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I love to age gratefully every Friday with gerontologist Holly Kelly right here on the Aging Gratefully radio show. Be sure and tune in. You won't be disappointed.
Thank you so much, best listeners in the world. I'm an authority on that. And you are. You're amazing out there. Welcome back to Aging Gratefully. I'm your host, gerontologist Holly Kelly, here today with Dr. Monique Nugent, who is a practicing hospitalist, physician leader, and advocate dedicated to making healthcare equitable, safe, and high quality. I mean, my goodness, we want all of those things. And she's here sharing how we can really position ourselves to have that type of experience in a hospitalization situation. Before we resume our conversation, I want to give our listener shout out for this episode to an Apple listener who wrote, "Well worth the listen. Holly somehow makes aging cool." Well, thank you. We do try. Her guests really echo her enthusiasm and provide wonderful insight on a variety of topics. Well worth the listen. Thank you so much. We really appreciate when you leave us reviews, and it's kind of boosts us. It puts a little gasoline in our tank and lets us know that you're really liked it so much that you chose to go and leave us a review. So thank you. Thank you. When you do that, we really appreciate it. And what else do we appreciate? Absolutely. Today's guests. I know that you are loving this conversation. This is really an important conversation and useful and something that we can all just really listen to and follow these different aspects that she's sharing and incorporate them so that we have good outcomes for those unexpected or even those upcoming expected hospital situations. You can learn more about her by visiting her at drmoniquenugent.com. And my goodness, she had this amazing book published earlier this year, Prescription for Admission. She provides so much important information to guide each of us for an optimum hospital experience. And I know that before break, we were talking about so many important documents that we need to be aware of, and those physician and family meetings. So, Dr. Monique, whatever you want to lead with, I'll let you take it from there.
I would say let's start with family meetings. For me, family meetings have been where I think some of my best work as a physician takes place, because it's a place where we're getting all the cards on the table. We have hopefully all the stakeholders. And by that, I mean people who are important in the care for the patient, right? Patients are not always the only ones making their decisions. They often rely on their loved ones and other social supports to help them make decisions. And unfortunately, there are times where patients are not making their own medical decisions. And I get to sit and meet with the people who are doing that, who are caring for somebody. And like I said, that's where some of my greatest work goes, because that's when I can really hear what the concerns are, what the fears are, what the hopes are. And we can make a path together to get there. Right. And so what I always encourage people to do is, first of all, write everything down. Because I guarantee you what's going to happen is you're going to go into the room and then everything's going to come out of your mind. Because that's just human nature. You're there, you have so many things to say and so many questions you want answered. You know, write everything down and get everybody together who's important for the decision-making process. And that can be, you know, I've seen spiritual leaders in addition to family members, you know, people who are significant others, and even court-appointed decision makers. You know, if that is the situation, they should be there as well. On my side, medically, I always try to get the bedside nurse to come if possible, right? That person gives a different idea as to what the moment-to-moment care for the patient is. And then if I have a specialist who's available or another ancillary care member who's available who can give us a key piece of information, I always invite them as well. So one of the care team members who I often invite are speech therapists or speech pathologists who help us to figure out how well people swallow. Because that's a big question I get is often around feeding. And so it helps family members to hear from the therapist who does the testing and who's helping the patient, you know, learn the skill again as to where they are in their swallowing and why maybe mom or dad isn't safe to eat this type of food yet, or maybe we may not get back to that, you know. And so physical therapists are another really great team member to come because in addition to me, who can say, well, you know, unfortunately, a stroke has affected this side of the body, you have a physical therapist who's able to give a much deeper understanding of what they'll need to move around safely, right? Will it just be a cane? Will it require a walker? Are we talking about a two-person assist? You know, all of this information helps to make decisions. My main job is going to be to give you the medical understanding of what's happening so that we can get to those hopes, right? We can get to what are we hoping to get out of this hospitalization? And every hospitalization is different. You know, I have a ton of hospitalizations that never require a family meeting. I got a bad cut on my foot. It got stitches. I got antibiotics. I went home. Yay, that is great. You know, but on the other end, you know, we have people with really complex things that are happening. And we may be planning for things in the future. Or something suddenly happened and all of a sudden the future looks different, right? Can dad go home again? Well, is home safe anymore? And so this is where I really enjoy hearing those hopes because we can work and it may not be in this hospitalization that we really achieve things, but we can work together down the road.
Mm-hmm. And certain documents are also important that come into play. We've got, you know, aside from care partners, medical decisions, you know, this document that's going to deem, you know, the ultimate decision maker, especially when that's a little foggy.
Right, right. So there's a lot of documents that people come with. The ones that I'm always most interested in are the medical mobile orders. Different states have different names for them. They're either called MULFs or pulsed forms, right? And what that says is, I do not consent or I do consent to CPR, intubation, electric shocks. You know, it's really about code status. And this piece of paper people can fill out. I always encourage that you fill it out when you don't need to. This is something that I always tell patients, the best time to make decisions is when you don't need to make decisions. When you have
very true. Crisis point is not when we need to be doing this. Do this right ahead of time.
So, and put a copy on the refrigerator, make sure your primary care doctor has the copy and make sure whoever you deem to be your medical decision maker, or if you can't make those decisions for yourself, also has a copy. And then that brings us to the next document. And that document is the advanced directive. Now, advanced directives are going to be as verbose as you want to, or as, you know, thin and nondescript as you want to. This is going to be where you say, I would like my daughter, Jane, to be my medical decision maker. And some people leave it at that. And then other people go through and say, And this is what I want. If I can't speak for myself, this is what I want. And you can go through and cover anything. I've seen everything from, you know, whether or not people want dialysis covered to how long people would want to be on a ventilator, to, you know, what they would want done if they needed artificial nutrition. So make sure you put what you want to put into it. And I always encourage people to put more rather than less, because I think what that does is it gives a person who's making decisions for you a guide, right? Someone who's your healthcare proxy is really supposed to be acting as if they're you. And the more information you can give them, the less that they have to really sit down and think about and maybe feel the weight of. But the more they feel empowered to say, you know, Dad already told me what he wants, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to be his advocate. I'm going to be his proxy to the fullest. And, you know, I always encourage people, like I said, to not put a lot of burden of decision-making on somebody. Instead, give them the empowerment to follow through with what you want.
Yes. And we're big believers on this show of advanced directives. I preach it all the time. And less than 70% of people are actually doing these documents, and the 30-ish percent that are often doing it during a crisis event. And mm-hmm. so, or, you know, if you don't do it, you may wait too late and you're unable to do it. And yeah. so that creates a crisis event for sure. So this is such an important and easy thing. It's simple. It's a simple document. Not necessarily easy to think these things out. I think that they take a lot of thought, but it's definitely something that's not difficult for everybody listening to make sure that they have this. So I'm thinking about mindset. When we're in the hospital, optimism can be challenging. Often it's a less than ideal situation. So if you could walk us through some maybe tips on how we would mentally prepare for what's ahead, maybe testing. We often don't know what something's going to be like. Is it going to hurt? Is it going to be this? How long is it going to take? All of that.
So this is where I would say information is key. If you, now you've already given information, I've asked you as a patient to be a source of information. And now I want you to ask for the information, as much information as you need. Hopefully you get a chance to go over some of the parts of the book that talks about informed consent, right? Because informed consent is where we tell people what the risks, benefits, and alternatives to any procedure are. And then, you know, someone can decide whether or not they want to go through with it. And that's really where I want you to ask all those questions. Will it hurt? How long is it going to take? Is there something else that I can do? What information are you looking for when you get this test? And then what are you going to do with that information, right? Because I always find that it's the anxiety not only comes from not knowing what the test says, but then, okay, now what? You know, and that's mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. piece of anxiety that people have. And so really ask that question. Okay, doctor, you know, we're going to get this MRI. What are we going to do with that information? You know, and they should be able to tell you, well, you know, this is going to tell us, you know, if you have X, Y, and Z, and if you do, then we will call the next specialist, or we will prescribe this medicine, or, you know, we need to talk about that intervention, right? So the more information you have, hopefully that helps a lot with the anxiety. If you're really having a lot of anxiety, I would always suggest people try like meditation, mindfulness, square breathing, relaxation techniques. But I also would say this is not the time to be a hero. If you feel like you need a little bit of something to get you through the test, I would prefer you ask and say, hey, you know, I have a really bad time with claustrophobia. Because if you can't complete a test, there's going to be more anxiety when you have to go and do it again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
yes.
Can't complete the test, then they'll say, well, what do we do now? I don't have this piece of information I was really looking for, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have to ask for something medically, an anti-anxiety medicine, a little bit of Ativan or melatonin or something to help get you through the test, I would definitely suggest that. And also understand that a lot of tests we know are uncomfortable, and they may come with some kind of medication or sedation in general, and ask about that. I do get a lot of people who ask, like, can I be knocked out? Mm-hmm. And like, general anesthesia is not always the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a spectrum.
Sleep like no other.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a spectrum. And so we're on that spectrum. Can they help you be? I would say definitely ask. The other thing is, please don't skip your medications. If you take a medicine at baseline for anxiety or depression or any other mental health disorder, make sure you're getting those in the hospital, right? Because you don't want to have that on top of everything else not being treated. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, no one is going to be wagging a finger at you. We want you to be able to get through your hospitalization. And so make sure you ask for your antidepressant and your anti-anxiety medicine, the things that you take to get through your day.
Yes. And, you know, as we're in the hospital, family members that may be supporting a loved one that's in the hospital, we all kind of have a way of getting close with the caregivers and staff that are, you know, part of, you know, our loved one's recovery journey or treatment journey. And so I'm wondering how family members can be advocates, because medical professionals get tired too, and they can get exhausted. And so if we see something that we're like, this machine's making a noise, or that looks low, what role does the family have to kind of advocate for their loved one?
So I had a really great conversation about this the other day. I always suggest that those type of things be addressed immediately and as locally as possible, right? So let's take the toileting, for instance, right? Toileting in a timely manner is very important, not just for cleanliness, but also for how people feel about themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find that your loved one is not being toileted fast enough, this is something that needs to be addressed. And this is just an example, something that should be addressed immediately and as locally as possible, right? Talk to the bedside nurse and talk to the charge nurse, because what may happen is you may find that there can be another intervention that people didn't know needed to be done, right? Maybe a nursing assistant, maybe that nurse didn't have a nursing assistant assigned for the evening, and they didn't realize her patient load was that high. So now they've added another head. Or maybe it's that, you know, someone's urine or stool needs actual different intervention, and they could add a catheter. They can, you know, add different ways of, you know, covering the stool, right? It may be that there's also, you need to talk to the physician. Oh, they're having a lot of diarrhea. Is there something medically that we need to intervene on? Is it the medication? Is it an infection, right? So those type of things should be addressed kind of as, like, as immediately and as locally as possible. Because as the family member, you're going to come by and you're going to see these like moment to moment things during your visit. And those moment to moment things make a big difference, right? I don't want people to wait until they leave to write a letter, you know, or to reach out after hospitalization, because we really should make you comfortable and safe at the moment, right? And so reach out and get those problems addressed as immediately as possible.
Yes, I think that that's a great way to handle it. And that way, nobody has any questioning and awareness. You're talking to that communication aspect of it again. As our show kind of is getting to the back end, I want to talk about, everybody wants to go home. We want to get better and we want to go home. So let's talk about that transition and making home ready to return to.
So what I would want to say is that don't be disappointed if home is not the place after the hospital, right? Everybody wants to go home. But there may be, if, you know, if you still need some wound care or some rehabilitation services, or if things need to get put together before you go home, it's okay, right? But home is hopefully going to be the next place. And what I want you to do for home is to treat everything that you're getting as a prescription, Right. So if you're going home with a walker, treat that as a prescription. It's not a suggestion. It's a prescription, just like anything else. It's for your safety, it's for your care, right? And make sure you have all of the equipment that you need. I want you to redo that same medication reconciliation process when you get home. So I have had the chance to do some home visits with the nurses, and I'm always surprised with how many jars of bottles people keep over the years. They kind of don't throw them away. And
It's
I am very much encouraging the exact opposite. What I want you to do is go through, they're going to give you a list of medications you should be taking. Make sure that that's the list of medicines that you have. And anything that's not on that list, I always say put them in a couple of different bags. One is the bag of, I should not be taking this. You're going to put it down so it could be disposed of properly. The next bag is going to be, I might take this later, right? Because we may say, oh, while you're taking this antibiotic, don't take another medicine, something like that, right? And then the third one is, I don't know what to do with this at all. And I'm going to bring this to the primary care doctor so they can go through it and help you, you know? Because again, it's about safety. You know, I've seen patients come in. When I used to do primary care in my residency, patients would come in with bags of medicines and tell me, well, I take a little of this and a little of that. And a little, and be like, wow, that scares me a little bit. So let's go through the list and make sure we're all on the same page, you know? And then the next thing I want to do is make sure you have your social supports. Your social supports are just as important as any other thing that we're gonna say you need to get better, right? So if you need someone to spend a couple of nights with you because you know, you're still having a hard time getting out of bed, do that. If you need a little bit more help at home, get that help. If you need people to come and visit you want to have your sister call and check on you a couple of times, get those social supports because that's really also going to help with your mood, help with your outlook, and help you plan and get better. So we don't all do anything in a vacuum.
I think everything that you've shared is so important to arm us with the best experience, but also being realistic that we may not always go home and having the greatest experience and opportunity to recover and heal from the hospital. So, with just 3 minutes left before we have to part ways, is there anything you feel that we haven't discussed that's really important to this conversation? Your book, Loving It, Prescription for Admission.
Thank you so much. But one thing I really want to say is, well, I would say two things. One, I really want people to understand to be that source of consistent and correct information. Own that information and be empowered that you own that information and that you're part of the care team. And the other thing that I would suggest is to find a good care partner. You know, that doesn't mean that this someone who's going to be making decisions for you, right? It just means it's someone who's helping you get through this hospitalization. We don't do anything in a vacuum. You're going to need somebody to do a couple of things at home while you're in the hospital. You might need someone to decompress. You know, when you're being discharged, somebody to come sit and listen with you with them when the nurse goes through your discharge paperwork. Because again, it's a lot of information. Don't do it by yourself. Find a good care partner to help get you through your hospitalization. Right. For most people, that tends to be the person they or their healthcare proxy, but it doesn't have to be.
Well, I mean, sometimes we need a wing person. In this case, we need a hospital wing person,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. You know, trust me, there's always something else going on that you're going to need somebody to help you
Yes,
out.
don't be afraid to ask for help too. That's for certain because people want to be there and support and encourage another's journey. So, our time has gone so quickly together. This is so important. I want to bring this show to listeners because at some point we absolutely will either experience this ourselves for, a shocking reason or for us to get better and rehab, or a loved one on behalf of a loved one, we may be supporting their journey. So, I really appreciate that you've written this book, Prescription for Admission. I believe it was just released in January, right?
February
In
2nd.
February of this year. So check that out and buy it as a gift. Get it for someone that you know is going through something so that they are armed with this great material. Of course, we can't have the Time end without knowing how you age gratefully.
Thank you. So, you know, I'm really learning. I'm still in my 40s and I'm learning that, you know, how to do a little less and how to take some time to enjoy the journey. As I watch my parents age, I'm learning from them. And that's the thing that I'm learning is to slow down a little bit. And that's going to make, I think, a big difference.
So. Oh, I love that. And I think that that's so important to embrace that as part of all the other great things you're doing. We appreciate the gems you're bringing to the world. You're a rock star. Thank you for writing this book, Prescription for Admission. I invite listeners to check you out at drmoniquenugent.com. And just thank you for spending this time with us and educating us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You've been listening to Aging Gratefully, and I'm your host, gerontologist Holly Kelly. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you've enjoyed our message, I invite you to subscribe and share it with others. May you remember to never act your age, and that age is just a number. And may you enjoy and embrace the coming week in the spirit of gratitude. Until we meet again, here's to living your best life now.
I used to think time was my enemy. My future wasn't looking good. So worried about the things I couldn't see. I couldn't see the things I could. I was aging fearfully, worrying my life away, when all along I should have been thankful for every day. Finally made a friend of time. Now you could say that I'm aging gratefully.